The following program is suitable for all ages.
The phone. A certain magic will always linger with the very name. It speaks of courage and fervor in the world's most brutal game. 55, worn by Doug Buffone, a Chicago Bear through and through. He demanded excellence of himself and anyone wearing navy blue.
You tell me what's going on. This is moronic. We're going to get our whipped all the way down the line. I want somebody to get kicked in the and get out there and play. You're getting paid to play this game. And play it right. I don't mind you getting beat. I got my whipped many times. But I tell you, I took somebody down with me. You are a professional team. Act like one, for God's sakes.
Football fans, this is Buffone 55, the John Buffone Show.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another season of Buffone 55, a fast-paced and passionate podcast about Chicago Bears football. I'm your host, John Buffone. It's great to be back for the official start of our third season of B55. We're coming to you live on Tuesday night, our new night for the season on our Mixlr.com channel. The podcast version, of course, will be available to you early Wednesday morning. I'm thrilled to be here for my third season and on the show, and just as thrilled to introduce you to our new producer and moderator, Alyssa Barbieri. Alyssa, welcome. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you, John. I'm excited to get started.
I am too. Now, Alyssa, I need you to tell us a little bit about yourself. You know the format of this show. At the beginning, at the end, you ask me 5 questions, and I have 55 seconds to respond to each question in honor of my late uncle and Chicago Bears great, Doug Buffone, who wore number 55. But let's turn the tables here. I want to give you 55 seconds to tell us a little bit about yourself. This is kind of weird for me being on the other end of this, but the clock starts now. Give us your answer.
I am a school teacher by day and a writer by every other few second. I am a contributor for Bears Wire. I write about entertainment. I record a podcast, another podcast as well. I live in Florida, so right now I'm currently watching one of these hurricanes that are coming my way, hoping that it doesn't ruin my college football season. I am from Florida, but I am thankful that I am a Bears fan, thanks to my dad. Because I could have well been a Lions fan, so I'm very thankful that that didn't happen. I am a fan of every other Detroit sport, though, so don't hate me.
Nah, it's okay. We come from the same cloth. I'm a Pittsburgh fan for everything besides the Bears, so we share a common Bears love, and then, you know, outside of that, not so much.
And that's what's important, right? The Bears.
Absolutely. The Bears are the most important. Absolutely the most important. So I'm ready to get this show started. How about you?
Well, I'm super psyched to partner with you this season. We've got us Lauren Cox of NBC Sports Chicago in the wings. But before we bring him in, let's get to our first set of B55 questions. You ready?
Let's do it.
So now that we've had a few months to absorb the 2018 Chicago Bears season, what are your thoughts on the entirety of Matt Nagy's first year as head coach? Your 55 seconds begin now.
I mean, can you ask for much more? Obviously, we could have asked for a playoff win, but man, how about a coach that invigorated a team and a fan base? How about Chicago Bears football meaning something in January, not having to look at mock drafts in October? Listen, the Bears were 5-11 in the NFC North basement in 2017. This guy comes in, they go 12-4, and they win the division. Think about the other first-year head coaches last year. Would you rather have Matt Patricia? How about Steve Wilks? Do you even know who that is? That was a Cardinals first-year head coach last year. He lasted 1 year, and he's gone. Pat Shermer and Mike Vrabel are respected minds, but would you rather have them running the ship right now? Nagy installed a system that works, but he also installed a culture that works. These players want to win. They don't accept defeat. They win games that they would have laid down in under John Fox. Listen to all the first-year head coaches last year. Gruden, Frank Wright, the aforementioned Patricia, Shermer, Wilks, and Vrabel. Who are you taking? I'm taking Nagy. I think he's at the top of the list. Oh, I came in under time. Wow. That never happens.
You made it. Look at that.
Like I was saying before we started, my cadence is a little off. The 55 seconds, I got to get back in my groove a little bit.
Yeah, I got to hit mid-season form. Let's go.
I'm trying.
Now, if you go to social media, and I'm sure that you've searched for comments from some of the fans of Packers, the Lions, the Vikings, you will find a pack that are critical of the Khalil Mack acquisition by Ryan Pace. Even though he compiled 12.5 sacks, 6 forced fumbles, two fumble recoveries, and an interception return for a touchdown. Not to mention he was named a first-team All-Pro. They do cite the salary being a burden on the cap, the draft assets lost, and more. What say you about Ryan Pace's trade? You've got 55 seconds.
Look, if those teams would have landed Mac, see if they say the same thing. I said this before and I'll say it again. The Bears traded a bunch of scratch-off lottery tickets for an automatic jackpot. Losers always complain about salary cap problems for other teams. Oh, you got a generational defensive player? Good luck paying him in 4 years, LOL all caps. You know, focus on your own dumpster fire before you start poking holes in a team that just won the division. Remember when Seattle invested heavily in their defense when Russell Wilson was on his rookie deal? Remember when they won a Super Bowl and then got to another? Kirk Cousins for the Vikings is making $28 million this year. Stafford, 13.5 with a 5.5 roster bonus and his $92 million guaranteed. See how many playoff wins that translated into. And last year, Rodgers signed a four-year, $134 million contract with Green Bay, including $57 million, a signing bonus, $98 million guaranteed. Mitch will make a little over $3 million this year and $4 million next year. Maybe a franchise tag after that. If the Bears are really strapped and in panic mode, they have an out in max contract in 2021 where the dead cap isn't so bad. So I think they're going to be fine.
And speaking of trades, some people say that the biggest trade of Ryan Pace's career was moving up one spot in the 2017 NFL draft to secure the rights to quarterback Mitch Trubisky. Now that Trubisky has 26 NFL career starts, 14 of them under Matt Nagy, can you please evaluate the transaction for the organization and perhaps give us a grade to date? Your 55 seconds starts now.
All right, well, I've always tried to be as pragmatic as possible when it comes to Trubisky. I don't count anything he did in his rookie season as progress. He basically learned how to hand the ball off and watch a coaching staff crap its pants on the field in his rookie year. But I've always said this, as shocked and as kind of perplexed as I was when the pick was made, that's how happy I am about it in retrospect. Can you imagine not drafting Trubisky and having an entire year of Mike Glennon? Well, John, they could have gotten one of the quarterbacks last year like Darnold, Josh Allen, Baker Mayfield, Lamar Jackson. And then they don't get Roquan Smith. And then there's no guarantee they could have drafted one of those guys high enough or even if those guys work out. Listen, Trubisky is the guy. For better or for worse, the team respects him. The coaches respect him. He is primed to have the best season of his life. Now, that being said, it's okay to hold him to a higher standard this year. This is year two in Matt Nagy's system, and that means he should have a leap in production. Right now, I give it a grade of a B with the possibility of rising to an A, but I also give it the possibility to slip to a C. This is a pivotal season.
Couldn't agree more. This season's going to tell us a lot of what we need to know about Trubisky. So, as we know, Vic Fangio is now the head coach of the Denver Broncos, and Chuck Pagano takes over as Bears defensive coordinator. If we were to poll members of the media, we might see the consensus being that the Bears defense will see a drop-off in 2019 as a result of Fangio's departure. What are your thoughts on the impact of Fangio's departure and Pagano's presence? Your 55 seconds begin now.
Well, obviously losing Fangio is a loss. I don't think anyone's pretending it's not, but some of these critics, man, it's like they gutted the roster. Pagano's a player's coach. Guys love playing for him, and he's not changing the entire scheme. They're not going to run a 3-3-5 or a 4-4. They might be a little more aggressive, and they probably have a net positive gain in signing HaHa Clinton Dix, and they have some interesting cornerback prospects, but you won't clone Fangio. You just can't. There's a reason he's a head coach now. Teams lose coordinators, though. Look at how many coordinators have swung through New England. Now, I'm not trying to compare the Bears to the Patriots quite yet, but it's not like this is a death sentence. Romeo Crennel, Charlie Weiss, Josh McDaniels going to Denver, Matt Patricia. Somehow the Patriots have withstood those fatal blows. I think Pagano is a very solid replacement, and the players are still there. I don't see a defense with Khalil Mack, Roquan Smith, Danny Trevathan, Kyle Fuller, Eddie Jackson, Akeem Hicks, and Eddie Goldman taking a huge step back, unless there are injuries, which is not the argument in this case. Fangio's not wrapping ankles in the training room. So if they regress because of injuries, that's not because of Pagano.
And I have one last question before we bring Lauren Cox in. I must hear your reaction to the retirement news of quarterback Andrew Luck. All of us are clearly shocked by the news and that it was reported during the Bears-Colts game. What do you make of the entire situation? And I know 55 seconds may not be enough time to react, but that's what you got.
Look, I've seen a lot of guys trying to get attention by ripping Andrew Luck, saying he's soft and he's not a warrior and that people who have harder jobs don't quit. It's all nonsense being spewed by idiots trying to get the next big debate show on an obscure cable network. Listen, Andrew Luck's 29, financially stable, and worried about his health. If you ask a steel worker who deals with pain every day from his job if he would quit the next day if he were put in a financially stable position, I'm guessing the majority of them would do it. Why do we expect these guys to sacrifice everything, including their future health, for our entertainment? If you love the game and can play 15 years, do it. If you're getting the hell beat out of you every day for 7 years and you want to get out and it's waning on you physically and mentally, go ahead and leave. But you're going to give him crap for walking away? Remember when Gronk retired at the age of 29? I didn't hear the same kind of vitriol. Why is that? Because he played a more physical position? Or maybe because criticizing a lovable guy like Gronk won't create a good enough stir like it is taking shots at a former number one overall pick? I get being upset that it's a couple weeks before the season, and if you want to talk about the timing, that's a completely different conversation, but going after a guy for not being tough enough, that's like the drunk old guy in a bar who always talks about how much he used to bench if he could kick everybody's ass. He only gets attention when he starts yelling, and that's what these people are doing. They're just yelling for attention. But I'm going to stop yelling for a little bit. I'm going to bring in Lauren Cox. He's a longtime friend of the Barroom, and now you can find him almost anywhere you look. I think I saw him on a billboard today. You can hear him on Locked On Bears podcast, which brings daily news and analysis on the Bears. You can also read his work at NBCSportsChicago.com and BearsWire.com. And he's also an analyst for ProFootballFocus.com. Lauren, welcome to the show. How you doing, bud?
Hey, I appreciate you having me on. You handled those five questions. I mean, left, right, like jabs in a boxing ring. You were nailing it. So
you're speaking my language, buddy. I appreciate that. I wanna jump right into it. I mean, we're heading towards that time where coaches are not playing their starters in the preseason. And at the forefront of that movement was Matt Nagy. Kind of took some shots for it last year, doing it again this year. What are your thoughts on Nagy's decision to once again rest the starters in the preseason?
I get the impression that, you know, he's sort of at the front end of the trend here, right? That as you see last week in the preseason, Rashawn Gary, the Green Bay Packers, goes down with a bad injury, and Quinemius St. Brown, their wide receiver, and we saw, I think Cam Newton was banged up a little bit, and all these different teams across the board that played some of their starters having some injury issues, and the Bears avoiding those pretty darn well. So, I think for now, teams are going to kind of watch the Bears and say, okay, how often will this be affecting what they do week one? Obviously, last year they lose week one, but didn't seem to have too much to do with what had happened in the preseason. And a lot of people are going to say Thursday night next week against the Packers, how do the Bears do there? Because if it doesn't seem to have any impact on their regular season wins and losses, then I think you're going to see teams start to make that shift over. But I think there's always going to be at least a few of those old school teams and old school coaches that say, you know what, we've always used the third preseason game as our dress rehearsal for our starters, and we're going to play our starters in the preseason because that's how we've always done it. But Nagy seems to certainly be at the front of this new school look of don't need to play those guys so much in these preseason games, especially because the CBA might change all of that in the next cycle here.
Absolutely. That CBA probably is going to change the landscape of the league. One guy who's not getting a whole lot of work but is going to have his workload increase tremendously in about a week is Mitch Trubisky. A lot's been made of his struggles at training camp. Are people reading too much into this because the training camp is sometimes where you work out what you can do, what you can't do, and you're taking chances? Or is there a genuine concern? What do you expect from Trubisky in year three?
I think there would be a lot less concern if we had seen him in some preseason games as well, but I'm not taking the training camp issues into the regular season. And I think back to last preseason and training camp with Patrick Mahomes, the Kansas City Chiefs. I think this is sort of the popular example, but when they had the Chiefs training camp practice, obviously Matt Nagy not there, but Mahomes throwing a lot of interceptions, and especially being a guy coming out of college that was sort of thought to be maybe a little bit more reckless with the ball and take more chances in a game, there was some concern that that was a continuation. But instead, it was, like you said, him testing things out, trying to figure out what he is and isn't able to get away with in a game situation and take that into the regular season and feel like he knows where his boundaries are. I do think that's been the process for Mitchell Trubisky. I think it would be nice to see him get some opportunities to sort of feel out that boundary in a game situation where it's not just practice against your opponents, and maybe a little bit of preseason throwing would have been beneficial there, if not anything, than to just sort of perhaps ease the concerns of fans. But Matt Nagy, 100% confident that the process they're taking is going to be the best for this quarterback. And I think he knows better than anybody else what's going to be best for Mitchell Trubisky.
Well, while some teams are, you know, battling out, you know, quarterback competitions to see who's going to rise to the top, the Bears, have had a frustrating and we'll say sometimes comically tragic kicking competition. It's been long, arduous, and at times just frustrating, like I said, with Eddie Pinheiro, the last kicker standing on the Bears roster. He had an impressive performance last Saturday against the Colts. Do you think this is indeed the guy in Chicago, or is there a dark horse mass kicker that's going to be unveiled next Wednesday before the Packers game?
Well, unless the Bears make a call to the U.S. soccer player Carly Lloyd, that I wouldn't put anything past Ryan Pace at this point. But I do feel like if Pinheiro comes in against the Tennessee Titans here for the final preseason game and doesn't miss any more field goals, I feel like he's going to be the guy week one. I don't know that the Bears want to bring in somebody at the end of the preseason and have them come out and kick week one against the Packers, having never kicked at Soldier Field before and never kicked, you know, with this team. I know the game is in Green, or no, it is at home against the, so it is at Soldier Field, but having never kicked with this team and just completely take somebody brand new off this, well, maybe not off the street, but put somebody in there that hasn't been around this team before and just have them step in week one, like there's no transition period. I feel like at this point they want to avoid that. And if Eddie Pinheiro doesn't give them any more reasons to be concerned, even if he just hits a couple of short field goals against the Titans, but stays perfect and clean, I have a feeling he'll be their kicker going into week one. I don't know that he'll be their kicker going into week 8 or week 17, but I do think at this point it looks like he'll be the kicker week one.
Oh, that's what we all want to hear. Maybe he'll last. I mean, it's going to be another one of those things where Bears fans are holding their breath on every kick. Even if the kid turns out to be great, I think it's going to be in our DNA, at least for this year, to hold our breath on every single kick. But a guy who we're not overly, cautious about, we're getting excited about, is third round rookie running back David Montgomery. What do you think he can bring to this offense? What is it about him that impresses you the most?
I think the number one trait is the contact balance, and that's something that's hard to measure and sort of quantify in tangible ways. But the way he, and it's not even always as much as breaking tackles. I mean, a lot of it is breaking tackles. He was the most effective tackle breaker in college football last season, but just the way he's able to bounce off of contact. And that's not even a guy trying to wrap up his legs, but it's, you know, if an offensive lineman runs in front of him and he can sort of bounce off of him and keep his balance and his speed and not go to the ground and go down so easily. I mean, he's really the anti-Jeremy Langford, if we're being totally honest. And I just think that ability to refuse to go down, keep his center of gravity low, and still have pretty good explosiveness, you know, good hands, and being able to do a lot of different things. I don't know that he's going to emerge as this super dynamic breakout quite Kareem Hunt level. I mean, I think that expectation would be a little bit unfair for him, but I do think he's going to be a solid weapon in the first year and work into that rotation more and more until Matt Nagy just can't leave him on the bench anymore.
If you had a Jeremy Langford reference on your Buffon 55 bingo card, you are in good shape. Let's go on the other side of the ball now. A lot of people believe that the Bears defense is destined to regress in 2019. I mean, that could be true, but that also could be true only because they were so good last year. What are your thoughts on this defense and what they can accomplish and what they're going to do maybe a little differently under Chuck Pagano?
I think there are ways where the Bears are likely to be worse in certain areas, but there are other ways where the Bears can improve. And so I'm not sure where exactly that leaves them in comparison to last year. Like, I don't think they can replicate the vast number of turnovers that they were able to get last year. It's just something that year to year tends to fluctuate a lot from teams, but that doesn't mean they're not going to be the number one defense in the NFL. And I think there's more room for improvement from a pass rushing standpoint. Getting more from guys not named Khalil Mack and Akeem Hicks from week to week could go a long way. You look at Leonard Floyd, Aaron Lynch, and even, you know, Bilal Nichols and Roy Robertson Harris on the defensive line. And I do think we're going to see some different looks in terms of the front seven, because Chuck Pagano's a guy who likes to do a little bit more shifting around there right before the snap, where the defense will get lined up one way, the offensive line will make their protection calls based on where the linebackers and defensive linemen are, and then with however many seconds left on the play clock, the defense will make a call, and then you'll see the defensive lineman shift over, the linebackers shift to a new spot, you know, trying to confuse the quarterback and the offensive line right before the ball is going to be snapped so they don't have time to adjust their protection and hopefully win things that way. Whereas Fangio was much more likely to show you a similar thing pre-snap every time, but really change it up after the snap in terms of where pass rushers are going to come from, how you're going to stunt, twist, blitz, etc. I don't know that it's going to be a drastic increase in blitzing from Pagano. We'll see more of it, but I don't know that it's going to be this night and day difference that way. And I think it's just going to be a couple different looks here and there from the front seven. Maybe it suits them better than Fangio. Maybe it suits them worse. But overall, this team is too talented to drop off very much, if at all, from where they were last year.
You know, speaking of Chuck Pagano, I want to talk about the shocker that happened at the Bears-Colts game, and I'm not talking about Eddie Pinero's 58-yard field goal. I want to talk about Andrew Luck's retirement. Do you think him exiting the game is a sign of things to come when it comes to youth participation in the game, or maybe guys hanging it up a little bit earlier? Do you think this is, you know, foreshadowing anything, or just kind of a on its own kind of event?
I think it's a little bit unique just because Luck has been dealing with a pretty bad situation for a long time in Indianapolis in terms of poor offensive line talent and a lot of different injuries continuing to add up. But I also think he's sort of the next in the line of a trend that's already been starting. And I don't know that he's probably the biggest name and certainly the first like big quarterback in that regard. But I don't know how much he's just sort of contributing to something that, you know, started back with Chris Borland, the linebacker, Vic Fangio's right. linebacker with the 49ers. And, you know, we've seen guys since then do similar things. You know, Rob Gronkowski just recently was saying how he was in so much pain after the Patriots' last Super Bowl win that he's in the locker room and he can't lift his leg to get it out of his pants. He had to lift his right leg with his arms to get it up onto the bench to take his pants off. So, I mean, there's a very clear sort of trend with a lot of different players that's been building over the last, boy, close to a decade now. And Luck is certainly the latest in that trend. I don't know that any one player individually in this is going to have drastic effects, you know, as far as influencing other players to make similar decisions. But as this sort of body of players, this roster of guys who retire a little bit early continues to grow, I think you'll see more players at least sort of reconsider and be more informed about what they're doing on the football field. And does that ripple effect down to youth football? I think it depends on how the NFL continues to work towards player safety and how that plays out in college football, and the NFL CBA certainly will go a long way to that as well, but it really does trickle down to the high school.
We're talking to Lauren Cox of NBC Sports Chicago and BearsWire.com. Lauren, we're heading into the Bears' final preseason game, which means we'll soon know the 53-man roster. While we kind of know how it's shaping up, are there any bubble players that you see making or not making the cutter, and could there be some surprise cuts at the end?
Yeah, I don't know that there's a ton of big surprises, just how talented this team is. And how there's not a lot of wiggle room to, you know, squeeze more guys in or bleed guys out because there is so much talent here. I am curious at this point to keep an eye on Anthony Miller's ankle injury situation. I know he's been limited at practice since he returned on Monday. And I wonder if that might leave them inclined to keep, you know, a seventh wide receiver, for example, like Marvin Hall with Javon Wims, because Miller's injured, because Cordarrelle Patterson might be more of a hybrid wide receiver slash running back, so he might not even count as a full wide receiver. And, you know, even fourth round pick Riley Ridley, a little bit slow in the preseason as far as getting involved in the offense, and he had some injuries himself. So I wonder if that type of situation could lead the Bears to keeping seven wide receivers there. And I think a guy like Kylie Fitz, the sixth round pick at outside linebacker out of Utah from last year, at this point, I don't have a spot for him on my 53-man roster. I think he's been pretty well awful throughout the preseason, and I just don't think there's a spot for him on this 53. And when you look at what Chuck Pagano had done typically in Indianapolis, it was always either four or five outside linebackers. He wouldn't typically go to six. So, Fitz, I think, could be on the out there, whereas Pagano typically kept five inside linebackers. So I think you've got room for Trevathan, Roquan Smith, Nick Kwiatkowski, Joel Iebunewe, and I'm putting Kevin Pierre-Lewis as inside linebacker number five as a veteran at the position, a great special teams player. And I think he's shown you just a little bit more than Josh Woods through the preseason. And Woods has the disadvantage of still being practice squad eligible. You cut Josh Woods, I don't know that he's going to get picked up by any other team. So you can stash him there and keep Kevin Pierre-Lewis and have some of that depth in the building, just not on the 53-man roster.
A guy that's probably going to make the team but has been less than encouraging throughout the preseason is backup quarterback Chase Daniel. What are your thoughts on the Bears' backup quarterback situation, and should they have looked in another direction?
I go back and forth on this a little bit because Chase Daniel isn't in Chicago to be a good football player. He's there to be a player coach and a mentor for for Mitchell Trubisky. And through a season of this offense, mission accomplished, more, you know, his help in Mitchell Trubisky's development, I don't think we on the outside can fully grasp how valuable Chase Daniel has been to Trubisky. As much as they rave about him, I think that only scratches the surface of his importance to this team. So I do think he's been worth the money and the value in that regard. My question becomes how long he continues to have that value as Mitchell Trubisky continues to get more comfortable in this offense and really get closer and closer to quote unquote mastering it. And so, you know, maybe year two, you need him around again. And you never want to have Chase Daniel in the game. And I just feel like if Chase Daniel is going to play significant snaps, you know, and start multiple games, you're pretty screwed anyway if Mitchell Trubisky is going to be hurt for a long period of time. So whether it's Chase Daniel or backup quarterback of choice, you're not going to find a guy who you really feel great about having to play a ton of games. So we saw last year Daniel could win you a game against the Lions if everything goes right. And if everything doesn't, you might lose to the Giants. But if it's only one or two games and he can keep you around 500 for those one or two games, then Mitchell Trubisky can come back and I think your team will be just fine. So it's a luxury to worry about the backup quarterback. And I think the Bears are okay, even though it's not ideal.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with you. We're going to get more to that later on in my second set of 555 questions, but I'm completely on board with you on that one. The Bears head into the 2019 season as the reigning NFC North champions, but repeating as division champs could be tough with the division rivals getting better. Who do you think is the biggest challenge to the Bears in this division in 2019? The Packers with a new coach, the Vikings, you know, trying to bounce back after being potentially Super Bowl contenders last year. We can talk about the Lions if you want, but who do you think is the biggest threat to the Bears?
I think it's always going to be Green Bay for me until the quarterback situation changes there. And obviously when Aaron Rodgers gets hurt, the quarterback situation does change there. But I do think him coming back, seemingly, and I think the supposed disagreements with his new head coach is much, much more overblown in, you know, sort of the media and the fan base than it is from an actual inside the organization standpoint. I think they're going to be just fine in terms of their relationship. I don't know how innovative their offense is truly going to be and how well it's all going to work out long term, but I think short term that's a better situation than it's being made out to be. And Green Bay's defense has gotten, I think, significantly better in terms of talent. It's not dominant or anything like that. But I think the Packers, for whatever reason, Rodgers always seems to have a pretty good handle on what the Bears are throwing at him. And Minnesota just is a little bit sloppy around the edges for me. I mean, even their kicker situation is starting to look almost worse than the Bears, as they, you know, they traded for Kari Vedvik from the Ravens, and he's been struggling really bad and trying to figure out what they're going to do there. And I think there's just a little bit more, or maybe a little bit less confidence in what they're doing, a little bit more room for error with the Minnesota Vikings. So I do think it's going to be a difficult run through the decision, and I don't think Green Bay is worlds ahead of Minnesota, but at this point, while Aaron Rodgers is under center, I'm giving the Packers the nod.
Last question for me before we throw it into the chat room. Recently, Sports Illustrated predicted the Bears will finish last in the NFC North, which to me seems a tad absurd. It's absurd. But what's a reasonable expectation for the Bears in 2019? What do you think the Bears' record is going to be, and do they repeat as division champs?
I don't know for sure that they're good. I think it's going to be really tight for division champs. It's going to be the kind of thing where between the Packers, Vikings, and Bears, they're all within a win of each other. And, you know, the Bears might tie with one of them where they have the same total wins, and then it's a question of tiebreakers and NFC North division. And I think the Bears are a playoff team. Don't get me wrong. I'm fairly confident in that. But whether they're exactly number one in the division, that to me, I'm hesitant to lock in. But I still see this as a 10 or 11 win team. I think the schedule is going to be a little bit more difficult. I think teams are going to be a little bit more prepared for what the Bears are throwing at them offensively. You know, they'll have a lot more tape on Matt Nagy and Mitchell Trubisky. The Bears will throw some new things at them, and they'll still win a lot of great games, and it'll be an exciting season. But I just don't know that it's going to be quite as smooth as it was for a lot of last year. And that has, to me, less to do with the Bears specifically and more about a stretch of schedule against a lot of playoff teams. And I know it's all on paper, and things will change as the season goes on. And some of those hard games won't end up being as hard, but I think some of the easy games won't end up being as easy as you might think either. So I think they'll start strong with a pretty easy beginning of the schedule. There'll be some adversity along the way, and then I think they'll finish with a nice stretch down the line and have some confidence going into the playoffs. And then I think anything happens once you get that far, and you hope by then maybe there's a kicker who can hit a game winner at the end of a game,
God willing. And so you are saying this is a playoff team regardless, though, right?
I do. I think 7-9 from Sports Illustrated is a little, it's, I, you know, there's a path there if players get hurt and everything goes wrong, but you're reaching a lot for a lot of things not going right there.
That seems to be the general consensus. Alyssa, I know you've been monitoring the Mixler chat room. Any questions for Lauren from our friends? What do we got going on in there?
Yes, I actually have a few questions. Hello, Lauren. How you doing?
I'm doing well, Alyssa. I'm glad to be working with you on the podcast in addition to the written form.
Yes, exactly. Bears Wire, represent. So, Lauren, Mayor wants to know, she's concerned about Kyle Long and getting into so many fights. She wants to know, is he going to be focused heading into this season?
I think Kyle Long has been through so much in his Bears career that he doesn't have, I mean, he has no excuse to not be focused, right? I think when he's sat through previous, you know, half of seasons with the injuries that he's been dealing with, that's a lot of time for a player to sit and reflect about their football career and about what is important to them. And we sort of talked about it with Andrew Luck a little bit earlier, but you know, you look back at the last three seasons, we've got 8 games, 10 games, and 8 games from Kyle Long. All those recoveries are a lot of time to miss being on the football field and feeling like, you know, I need to be 100% and out there with my teammates. And it sounds like he's been healthy all off, well, through most of the offseason, back to 100% and healthy through all of the preseason. And I think it gets him amped up. It gets him motivated to be, you know, feeling even maybe young again out on the field and have some of that extra energy to fight and maybe go off the rails. But I don't think when the regular season comes around, I don't think it's going to be an issue. I think he is more than motivated to be on the field since he's had that taken away from him for 3 consecutive years. And hopefully he can hold on to that for a full 16-game season again.
So I also have a question from Otto's mom, who is wants to know, what are the Bears going to do about the swing tackle position? She says that things look scary after Massey and Leno.
So I do think this is one of the prime spots where they could add somebody from outside the organization. And I look at swing tackle, I look at running back, and I look at outside linebacker as spots where I wouldn't be surprised if they added somebody and kind of let go of all the bottom of the roster guys that they have there. But I got a lot of confidence in Alex Bars from the Indianapolis Colts game when he came in the second half, played the whole first half at left guard, second half at left tackle. And he, not that he looks like a guy that you want to start and play a bunch of snaps at left tackle in regular season games, but he looked like a guy that in a pinch, you know, if Charles Leno gets a concussion and misses the second half of a game and is ready for the next week, you can throw Alex Bars in there and survive. Again, might have some vulnerability long term and not something you want to have to rely on, but he's got some flexibility there. Of course, Cody Whitehair has some left tackle in his background. If you're in a pinch, you can move Cody Whitehair to left tackle and put in Alex Bars at left guard if you feel more comfortable there. So they have different options for left tackle. I don't know that there's a true great backup offensive tackle on the roster. Rashad Coward, still developing from his switch from the defensive line, looks fine as a run blocker, but very raw in pass protection from a technique standpoint. Really gets off balance easily and can be vulnerable in that regard. And Cornelius Lucas, their backup left tackle, a huge human being, but just not consistent enough for me to feel really comfortable there. So it's still a concern, and you'd like to sort of have somebody that you can really sleep better at night and say, this is a solid tackle at either spot. But between Whitehair and Bars and maybe Coward as he gets healthy again, I think you've got enough bodies to fill in if you need to. But if you have a significant injury at offensive tackle again, you've got big issues on this offensive line.
And so do you anticipate offensive coordinator Mark Helfrich calling plays during any regular season games? And what was behind him doing so last week?
I think it's sort of like what happened with Matt Nagy at the end of his time in Kansas City, that you know, when you're in certain situations and feeling like, well, you want to help your coworker and your friend and your I guess teammate, I mean your coaches, you want to help them out and help them get more experience and, you know, just sort of get another set of eyes and another brain behind the play calling decision. Obviously they talk about it during the week, they game plan together, they share opinions on evaluating the talent on the roster, but seeing how another coach might come in and call plays a certain way or handle certain situations in a game might be just useful for Matt Nagy to see another perspective on the exact same position in the same sort of, you know, play calling role. So I could see it happening, you know, in a week 17 game, if the Bears lock up the playoff spot and they're not playing the Vikings to knock them out of the playoffs and they don't have anything at stake there. But I do think it's valuable in that regard. And I also think with the way Nagy is now splitting practice this week, that the backups are all preparing for the Thursday night preseason game and the starters have been practicing separately to get ready for week 1. It would make sense that maybe offensive coordinator Mark Helfrich is handling the backups and he'll call the plays in that game and it's sort of his team there. But then when the big boys have to play against the real opponents, Matt Nagy sort of takes the reins back and keeps rolling the way things were.
And I got one last question for you, Lauren. From Tooch wants to know, any chance of the Bears being smart and picking up a developmental quarterback with a shred of athleticism?
I think long-term, you know, draft somebody next year. You don't have to use a second-round pick on them or anything like that, but I think it's always good to have young quarterbacks coming through the room. And I know Tyler Bray looked decent in the Colts game, but he hadn't in the first two preseason games. And like we talked about with Chase Daniel being that mentor, eventually Mitchell Trubisky will be a big boy and the training wheels will come off. He won't have to sit at the high chair to learn his offense, and it'll be his show. And you don't need a veteran backup behind him to show him the ropes. And Trubisky can start maybe passing some of his knowledge along to other quarterbacks. And I think, you know, you take a guy in the fifth or fourth or sixth round that has some upside and some talent, and maybe he plays well in the preseason, and you can trade him away for, you know, a draft pick to another team, or give you some flexibility down the line if for whatever reason something happens to Mitchell Trubisky. But I don't think you can ever go wrong by continuing to take swings at the quarterback position, because it is so valuable. And if you can find any sort of talented player there, I know you want to use picks to help your team elsewhere, so I wouldn't use a top draft pick there. But if whatever percentage of your six round picks flame out of the league anyway, you might as well try one on a quarterback that has a greater value if they do pan out and end up being that lottery jackpot.
Awesome, Lauren. Well, thank you so much for your time. Could you please tell our audience where they can find your work and interact with you on social media?
Yeah, I don't want to take up the rest of your show, so I'll do the short version there. On Twitter, at Cox Sports and the number one, Bears writing at NBC Sports Chicago and Bears Wire. I do the PFF grading, and then the podcast, Locked On Bears.
Awesome, Lauren. Well, thank you so much for being on Buffon 55. We hope to catch up with you down the road.
Absolutely, anytime.
Thanks so much, Lauren. Time for the second half of our B55 questions.
Let's jump right into it. I'm ready to go.
You and Lauren talked about the Bears' backup quarterback situation. What's your take on the play of Chase Daniel and whether Ryan Pace has committed the same mistake we've seen other Bears GMs make in the past, which is not securing a more reliable backup or even a developmental prospect? The stopwatch is set.
I'm going to echo a lot of what Lauren just said. I don't love Chase Daniel. I'll be the first to admit that. But who could they have signed that would really made everyone happy? Teddy Bridgewater? He turned down a starting position with Miami to stick with New Orleans. So who's left to sign? Matt Castle, Brock Osweiler, Landry Jones went for the XFL. So no luck there. I'm sure Nagy loves having a veteran who is well-versed in his system inside the quarterback room. Don't forget that Daniel was the backup in Kansas City all 3 years that Nagy was the quarterback coach. Then he spent 2 years in Philadelphia with Doug Peterson, who was the offensive coordinator with Nagy in Kansas City. So he has 5 years of experience in this system, and this has always been about Trubisky, if you ask me. What was A.J. McCarron or Tyrod Taylor or Trevor Siemian going to do for Trubisky? Nothing. They have to learn the system, and they're a year behind everything, so let's not act like every other team has a backup quarterback that can win a Super Bowl, by the way. We've seen it once with Nick Foles, and now he got $67 million with Jacksonville. Hey, let me give you some names. DeShone Kizer, Sean Mannion, Tom Savage. Who the hell are those guys? They're the backups in Green Bay, Minnesota, and Detroit. None of those teams are winning with those guys. This is why starters get paid so much.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, it's hard enough to find one great starting quarterback, yet alone a really good backup. So I feel like the Bears are in good hands there, having someone like Chase Daniel there to help mentor Trubisky. And the season's going to be a big one for him.
Couldn't agree more.
We've got one more game before the season opener. The fourth preseason game is the last chance for players to make an impression on the coaching staff and the GM for a roster spot or at a shot for the practice squad. Who are you most interested in seeing battle for a job on Thursday night when the Bears host the Tennessee Titans? The clock starts now.
I mean, there's a few positions that are intriguing, like outside linebacker. But for me, I've been fixated on the running backs. I think the Bears have a big decision between Kareth Wright and Ryan Nall. You know, White has blazing speed. He could figure into the return game a little bit. We know Nagy likes multifaceted players who can do a whole bunch of different things. He likes the Swiss Army knife players. But Nall's the big 6'2", 230-pound battering ram that could figure into the fullback role at times if they need him, since they don't really have an active one on the roster. He showed off his ability against Indianapolis with a 69-yard scamper. One of these guys is probably going to be on the practice squad, but I'm not sure that another team doesn't gobble them up. There is the doomsday scenario where Nagy blows it all up and thinks Cordarrelle Patterson will be a fine fourth running back, and then they're both on their way out. I don't necessarily think that's going to be the case, but there are a lot of options here, and maybe the fourth game decides that, although I think the staff is probably leaning one way right now.
I couldn't agree more, and I feel like they have really two good options with Nall and with Kareth White, and what also with White can bring to special teams as well, which we got a little bit of a look at during preseason. And I have to admit, I'm also one of the battles I'm looking at is Eddie Pinheiro against the rest of the NFL. We have to see. I feel like he's going to be the guy, but, you know, hopefully he doesn't just blow it. You know, we don't want no double doinks at Soldier Field, not a week, but nearly a week before, you know, they're hosting the Packers. So
Pinheiro versus the world.
Pinheiro versus the world. So what is your take on the Matt Nagy philosophy of not playing his starters during the preseason? I know you talked about that with Lauren a little bit. And do you think the NFL preseason is too long, or is it necessary to properly evaluate personnel? You are on the clock.
I don't mind it. The NFL is a league of attrition. The best ability is availability. We just saw Lamar Miller blow out his ACL, and he's out for the year. Cam Newton left the Panthers last game in a walking boot. And for what? Teams have combined practices now, and they have scrimmages, and these preseason games are just cheap money grabs for the NFL. The NFL preseason is absolutely too long. They served a purpose back in the day when guys were selling insurance and used cars in the offseason and didn't get into game shape until training camp, but those days are long gone. When the new CBA is bargained, I guarantee the preseason is shortened. The only unknown is how does the NFL recoup that money, because they aren't just going to sacrifice TV and ticket sales just for the hell of it. They floated out that stupid idea of an 18-game season with a 16-game limit for players, which is the most asinine thing I've ever heard. I need 55 seconds just to get started with that one. So maybe the easiest thing is to expand the playoff field to 7 teams. The number one overall seed gets a bye and the rest kind of battle it out. I don't love the idea of 44% of the conference making the playoffs. You're going to see a lot of 8-8 and 7-9 teams in there. But, I mean, this is something that's going to happen. Unless you expand it to 17 regular season games, the league's going to get shaken up after the next CBA.
And at this point, I can't help but look back at this time last year when Nagy decided to rest everyone in that third preseason game and all of the hate and the criticism he was getting as a result. And now he's sitting here looking like one of the smarter guys in the NFL. He's going to have his starters ready and healthy for that first game, September 5th, against the Packers.
Nobody's out for the year, which is a big, big thing when you go into week one.
Absolutely. So one of the biggest news stories for the Bears during camp was the Kyle Long fight with rookie defensive lineman Jalen Dalton. He allegedly ripped the headgear off his teammate, hit him with the helmet in the head and shoulder area, and then tossed it across the field. Coach Nagy was not happy, and Long was briefly suspended. The 30-year-old lineman has apologized, saying it was unacceptable for him to do anything like that. Long has been considered and has announced himself as a team leader prior to this incident. John, from a team perspective, do you have any concern that Long's action could destroy the harmony Nagy has worked to develop? Or is this a monsters will be monsters, let's get back to work and let bygones be bygones? 55 seconds, sir.
Listen, no one's perfect, and no leader is perfect. What shows leadership is that he didn't complain about the suspension or try to prove that he was wronged in some way. He owned it. He was accountable. That's more than we can say about a lot of people in this country. When you screw up, own it, fix it. No one should expect anyone to be perfect. It's impossible. When you lead by example, that means you show others how to act in good times and in bad as a team and personally. It's not going to necessarily help the locker room. This isn't going to bring them together or anything, but I really don't think it's going to hurt them either. Fights happen in camp. Long has gone back and forth with Akeem Hicks a couple of times throughout the years. This will be such a non-factor in about a week. Training camp crap basically gets flushed the second the ball gets kicked Thursday night at Soldier Field. What I've preferred it not happen? Yeah, I mean, I don't want to see players swinging helmets as weapons at anyone, let alone a teammate. But like I said, this won't even be recalled once the regular season starts. This is a non-factor. It's fine.
I couldn't agree more, especially because, I mean, I think they made it up until some of the last practices without any fights happening. And there comes a certain point that you're going up against your guys so often that you just want to start hitting other guys and emotions flare up. I completely get it. But like you said, Long taking accountability for what he did and that culture that Nagy has in place, I really don't foresee this being an issue.
100%.
So, John, 100 years of Chicago football. This is a big year. Your uncle has a prominent spot in the history of this team. Please express what that means to you and your family and your thoughts on this franchise. The stopwatch is off. You take as much time as you need.
Listen, I usually do a good job at realizing that sports are not life and death. I can easily deal with my favorite baseball, basketball, and hockey team losing. I usually get over that pretty quickly. However, I don't have that capability with the Chicago Bears. I've said on several occasions that the Bears are my most favorite thing in the entire world, and I have the rare and distinct honor of having a family connection to the organization. I loved my Uncle Doug, And my Uncle Doug loved the Bears, and listening to him on the radio after a Bears game was one of my favorite things in the world to do. But even before that, the Bears took a chance on him coming out of the University of Louisville. They were a gateway for a young Italian kid from a very, very modest Western PA town to help his parents out, to help raise his six siblings, one of which my own father, who still follows the Bears very closely. And because of that connection, I catch myself saying we when referring to the Bears, which I know is a big media faux pas, but I don't care. Now, aside from that, there's just so much history behind this franchise that helped shape the NFL. Sid Luckman in the 40s, including a 73-0 win over Washington in the 1940 NFL Championship game. Clark Shaughnessy, the father of the T formation, coaching beside Papa Bear Hallis in the 50s. The 85 Bears, potentially the best defense and maybe team of all time. A team that has incredible, iconic names like Butkus, Sayers, Peyton, Singletary, Urlacher, and yeah, Buffon. For 100 years, we have viewed theater in real life, a sports drama that incites passion and emotion. You see joy, sadness, relief, disdain, anger, anxiety, laughter, disbelief, and the occasional broken heart caused by something as simple as a piece of pigskin doinking off of a yellow goalpost. So why has this sport remained relevant for a century? Why is this game so important to us? How has a simple game of football captivated so much? Well, the answer is really that there is no answer. Each and every person that loves this game most likely loves it for their own reason. There are 100 things that draw us to football and will continue to draw us to football. And that is why it's going to be around for another 100 years. But it's about time that I get out of here, so that will wrap up this episode of Buffon 55. I want to thank Lauren Cox for being our first guest of the year. Remember to follow him on Twitter at LaurenCox1 or look for his podcast, Locked On Bears. And most of all, thank you to my new producer and co-host, Alyssa. We've got one under our belts. What do you think, Alyssa? I mean, let our listeners know where they can find you on social media and find your other work.
I'd say this is a pretty solid debut. I'm super excited to kick this 100th season off. You guys can follow me over on Twitter at Alyssa Barbieri, and you can find my work at bearswire.com.
Excellent, excellent. Also, I believe that I'm going to tell those listening to us live on Mixlr.com that just in a few minutes we got more shows coming up, don't we?
Absolutely. So in a few minutes we have two more shows coming up. We have Fantasy Football Goon with Joe Manziel, also known as Joey Two Scoops, and John Santucci, a.k.a. The Tooch. They will welcome fantasy football legend Spaceball, and the three will get you prepped for the upcoming season. That's followed by Shy Fans and the Stands with Greg Braggs and Joey Two Scoops. Those two shows, along with this one, will be available on podcast format. So make sure you subscribe to the Bears Barroom Radio Network.
That's right, and sign up on our Mixlr.com for email updates on all of our live shows. We love to have you in our chat room. By the way, it's absolutely free to sign up. So let's take this ride together, Bears fans. We hope you join us live, and if you listen to the podcast, please leave us a review. That helps us out immensely. But for Alyssa Barbieri, I'm John Buffon. This has been Buffon 55. We'll see you next week, Barflies.